This is Skyline Chili Cincy 360, about Cincinnati, from Cincinnati. Sponsored in part by Skyline Chili. Stop by Skyline Chili for a three-way or cheese coney today. Feeling good? It's Skyline time. This is ESPN 1530, Cincinnati Sports Station. Here are James Rapine and Mo Egger.
Here we are. Well, here I am, Mo out today. I'm James Rapine. It is great to be with you, little Skyline Chili Cincy 360, with you till 1 o'clock. Thank you so much for tuning in on a Tuesday. Woke up this morning early, hit the gym, and man, did I see snow flurries. Huh. That stinks. A lot to get to. Dave Lapham coming up in about 15 minutes. We're going to discuss all of the news. I mean, good God. Are the Bengals the most interesting? They've had the most interesting 48 hours that a 5-4 team has had that was afraid to make moves in free agency and or at the trade deadline. I mean, oh my, it's wild at PBS right now. Hugh Jackson's down there, according to reports. Terrell Austin's no longer there. Marvin Lewis has more power. And this is where I want to start it. And I have so many thoughts on what's taken place over the past 24 hours. Oh, and they have a broken fire alarm because of Sean Payton. Here's where I want to start, though. Ultimately, I was probably in this area the most critical of the Bengals' lack of moves at the deadline, the most critical of this organization for their lack of proactivity, their lack of aggressiveness is probably a better word, at the trade deadline and or in free agency. I said they should go get Dez, and they should be calling Arizona about Patrick Peterson, and they should be on the phone about with Golden Tate. They should try to get Demaryius Thomas. They should try, and try some more. They should be aggressive. So for those of you criticizing what they've done over the past 24 hours, here's what I'll say. And you might look at it and say, Hugh Jackson is not a good football coach. Why the hell are you bringing him here? He couldn't succeed in Cleveland. And I think that's very narrow-minded. Here's what I'll say, though. I don't know if it's going to work with Hugh Jackson. I don't know if Marvin Lewis is going calling the plays, if that's going to work. Here's what I do know. I like the aggressiveness. Again, the trade deadline, free agency, all of that. It wasn't about whether or not it would work. It was about showing your fans that you wanted to win. It was about showing the world that this wasn't the Bengals team that we've came to know and that we've known for so long, that they were going to be aggressive, that they were going to be different, that they were going to change. And I think firing a coordinator 9 games into his tenure, after he's been historically bad, after the team, a defense that has given up the 31st most points in the NFL, think about that. They're 31st in points given up at 32 per game. Only the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are worse, and it's only a difference of 3 total points. It's 32.3 versus 32. The Bengals' defense was atrocious. So guess what? Marvin Lewis and the Bengals, they were aggressive. Will it work? I don't know, but they fired 2 coordinators in the past 2 seasons in the middle of the year, something they hadn't done in the first 49 years of their existence. That's different. Like it or not, I don't know if it's going to work. Different doesn't mean successful. And successful doesn't mean different unless you're the Bengals, in which you haven't had success in recent years, so you need to be different. The Bengals, at least to a degree, are different. I'm not going to knock them for that. As far as Hugh Jackson, and Ian Rappaport was first on this, but if you follow me on Twitter, at James Rapine, you saw me, I guess I'll say, speculate yesterday morning. I had a feeling Hugh might be returning, and we all did. Let's be honest. The moment he was let go, and I believe it was on October 29th, I tweeted it out. Mo tweeted it out. Paul Daner tweeted it out. Catherine Terrell tweeted it out. Everyone that's close to the Bengals organization tweeted out about Hugh Jackson. Why? Because it seemed imminent. It seemed like a foregone conclusion. Boom. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, says Hugh Jackson is in town, and he's coaching today. He will be at PBS. He will be at Paul Brown Stadium. And here's why I'm not against this. And you can go into the dynamics, the workplace dynamics, and this and that and all these other things, fine. But if the Bengals are going to be aggressive, if they see someone who can help, and they believe that it's Hugh Jackson, Okay. At least you were aggressive. At least you were proactive. That deserves something. It really does. And the bar's so low for me. Think about it. There were people, and rightfully so, at the trade deadline saying, go get Jared Cook. Jared Cook is a fine tight end. He's a pretty good player. But good God. I mean, it's not like he's going to be the game changer that the offense needed or game changer that the Bengals needed. But you wanted to see some aggressiveness. Can Hugh Jackson help alleviate a little bit of stress that Marvin Lewis is going to have now that he's taking over play calling for the defense? Can Hugh Jackson help at all? I would say yes. Now, you might say, oh, but he's 8-44-1 as a head coach. You might say, what? He won 3 games in Cleveland. He's 3-36-1. 3-36-1, and you want to bring him here? Yes, absolutely. Is Hugh Jackson the only head coach that failed in Cleveland? Is Hugh Jackson the only man that went in there and said, hey, I'm going to make things awesome here, and then he fell on his face and failed? No, he's not. There are coaches across this league that have went to Cleveland and failed. And it's one of those things where you have to evaluate the coach, what he brings. You know him. And I can't wait to talk to Dave Lapham about this, because what kind of effect will this have long term on this organization? Mike Pettine's a good example. He's a defensive coordinator right now. Guess who? The Green Bay Packers. He was also head coach of the Cleveland Browns once upon a time. So to me, they're separate entities. Hugh Jackson isn't coming here to be the head coach of the 2018 Bengals. He's here to help Marvin Lewis. But you and I both know, and this is where it gets really interesting, is Hugh coming here to be Marvin Lewis's successor? It feels that way. And if I was Hugh Jackson, that's exactly what my thoughts would be. There would be a couple jobs that I would have my eye on. The only one in the NFL, the only owner that is going to hire Hugh Jackson to be a head coach after 8-44-1. Or excuse me, 11-44-1. It's hard to keep up. 11-44-1. The only one that's going to do that is Mike Brown, period. That's the only one. But if you get in the building and you can show him, then maybe you do become Marvin Lewis's successor again. And the other thing is, and Hugh Jackson was asked this when he went on his media tour, he's open to coaching in college. Here's what I'm going to say about Hugh Jackson, though. People in Cleveland aren't shaking. I went on Cleveland radio yesterday, and you know what they said? Hugh Jackson is gonna join the Bengals? The Browns are going to whoop the Bengals. That's what they said. That was the reaction. So understand that when you bring in a coach that was 3-36-1, 3.5 hours north, a coach that for his career is 11-44-1, that's not scaring anyone. That is like a former first-round pick that you traded for that's been a bust thus far. That's where Hugh's stock is now. And I get it. Hugh Jackson was a good coordinator here. I think he is a good football coach. I've said that on multiple shows the past couple of days, and it's like, people are like, really? You think, I went on with Gary Jeff Walker yesterday. He was like, you think Hugh Jackson's a good football coach? I absolutely do. I absolutely think he's a good football coach. And I think it's quite interesting that the Bengals were aggressive. I'm James Erpine. This is Cincy 360. You can't knock them for that part. You can tweet me at James Erpine, by the way. I'll get to as many tweets as possible. We'll get to Dave Lapham coming up in a few minutes. Look, sometimes things don't work out. The thing I'm critical of, and I think Mo's really kind of convinced me of this, because when Hugh Jackson got the job back in 2016 in Cleveland, I said, well, if anyone could turn around the Browns, it's Hugh Jackson. I think he can coach a lot of guys. I think he puts players in a position to win. All of the things he got knocked for in Cleveland, about half of them seemed like strengths when he went up there. How he can make the playbook and build around a player's strengths, not their weaknesses, put them in a position to succeed, and all of those things. And I will say this, bringing in a guy whose stock is at his lowest, it's not the worst thing in the world. But can he really help this team? Is Marvin Lewis, defensive coordinator, going to do enough? Is Hugh Jackson helping with game management going to be enough? I know he's a good coordinator, but he's not coming in to be a coordinator. I know he was a pretty good running backs coach. He's not going to be a running backs coach. I know he was a good wide receivers coach. He's not going to be the wide receivers coach. Hugh Jackson, what's his title? And Ian Rappaport just went back and forth. And I would say special assistant to Marvin Lewis, associate head coach, would probably be the highest title they could give him. It's just, it's mighty interesting. But on the surface, I think it makes sense for the final reason here and the final point I'll say. Hugh Jackson coached where for the past 2.5 seasons? Cleveland. You play them twice. No one has been better at handing Cleveland losses than Hugh Jackson. The dude was 3-36-1. If anyone can beat the Browns, it's Hugh. In all seriousness, like, if he can give you anything, any kind of edge, any kind of anything, bringing him in isn't the worst case. In the dynamic of him, Mike Brown, Marvin Lewis, how does Bill Lazor react? That will be quite interesting to see. But yeah, Hugh Jackson back at Paul Brown Stadium. Who would have thought that the Bengals firing a coordinator? Think about that. Firing a coordinator during the season for the second time in team history, back-to-back years, would be back of the page news on a Tuesday. Hugh Jackson, that news, kind of stealing the show. The other thing that I think is quite interesting here, and I've said this about the Bengals, it's been a criticism, and I think it remains one. They're always a step or two late. Always. Always a step or two late. With just things that they do, they usually get to the right decision, but it's always late. They promoted Bill Lazor to offensive coordinator after 2 games last year. You really thought after 16 games of Ken Zampezi that he was the guy? The answer was no. I speculated about his future after the 2016 season. Ken Zampezi didn't seem like the guy at offensive coordinator, and guess what? He wasn't. There are so many instances where it seems like they're a step or two slow. This past week, they were on the bye week. Don't you think that would have been a better time to move on from Terrell Austin, who was getting shredded already, whose defense clearly was an issue? Like, if you were hanging on by a thread, you thought going up against Drew Brees in that Saints offense was the time to say, oh, you know what? Sorry, Terrell. It's just a step slow. You would have had a whole week to adjust, a whole week to gather yourself, a whole week to game plan for the second half of the season. Same thing with Hugh Jackson. They play Baltimore on Sunday with a lot riding on it. You can essentially eliminate the Ravens. If you're the Bengals, and we haven't been able to talk much about Baltimore or much about football or since the show yesterday when we talked a decent amount about the game, but this team has a huge game Sunday. And you have all these moving parts, a new play caller in Marvin Lewis, Hugh Jackson's in the building, and you wonder if the team's either going to respond to the changes or if it's just going to be a distraction. That's something to monitor. And if you come out flat against Baltimore on Sunday, you're going to lose the fan base even more. I'm James Rapine, and this is Cincy 360. Up next, let's get a Bengals perspective from the man, our go-to anytime. There's Bengals news. Dave Lapham going to join us next. This is Skyline Chili's Cincy 360 show. We're with you till 1 o'clock right here on ESPN 1530.
Now Cincy 360 resumes. Brought to you by Safe Auto. Give us 3 minutes, save up to 25% on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati's sports station.
The Skyline Chili Cincy 360 show. I'm James Rapine. It is great to be with you on a Tuesday. Let's keep things rolling with the Bengals conversation with Dave Lapham, who's kind enough to carve out some time for us. Dave, I appreciate the time as always. Let's start with the Hugh Jackson news and obviously the Terrell Austin news as well. I was pretty critical of this team in their, at least the idea that they weren't aggressive in free agency here the past couple of weeks in addressing a hole or two maybe, or in at the trade deadline. Obviously, they didn't make any deals, and a lot of teams did. I like the fact that they were willing to approach this in an aggressive way. They didn't like what was happening on defense, so guess what? Now Marvin Lewis is taking over play calling, and Hugh Jackson's coming in as well. I don't know if it's going to work, but I do like the aggressive mindset.
Yeah, I think that it had to be done. I think Marvin, in his press conference, addressed the fact that what he saw on the sideline, you know, from players' reaction coming off the football field. I don't know what the interaction was like between, you know, players and coaches. He just didn't like it, though. Obviously, there was something missing. It just didn't work. The connection wasn't there. It was disjointed and dysfunctional. And then, you know, the results proved that. The proof was in the pudding. You know, you give up 480 yards to Pittsburgh, and then you give up 500 yards three straight games after that. Could have very easily given up 500 yards five times this year. They're giving up over 480 yards or more five times. So, you know, that's just not going to cut it. And instead of just, you know, riding the wave to the shore and then probably crashing a few times on the way in, they decided to get off the board and get on a new one. And, you know, this is a very kind of a unique situation. You know, I think that the Bengals are pioneering something here, you know, bringing somebody in to be do some of the head coaching game management duties and some of the administrative duties that the head coach has to do during the course of the football game, because Marvin is going to be, you know, tied up with the, you know, with his defensive football team. He's going to be huddling up with them, making adjustments as they come off the sideline. He won't be able to stand on the sideline and look out at the field of play and say, should we challenge that? You know, what about that spot for, you know, third down? Is it really fourth down and one, or is it really a first down? All those kind of things that have to go on. You needed somebody to alleviate those responsibilities, and Hugh Jackson, having been fresh off head coaching situation, and maybe his best friend, they're like brothers, you know. And I think whenever you put together a coaching staff, I remember talking to Bob Stoops one time at Oklahoma when he was putting his coaching staff together, and he picked his brother Mike to be his defensive coordinator. And I said, boy, that little nepotism there. And he just started laughing. He said, you know what? Every head coach will tell you what he wants out of his staff is loyalty and trust. He said, who can I trust and who would be more loyal to me than my brother? And I'm like, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And Hugh Jackson and Marvin Lewis have been through a lot of things together, and they're closer than a lot of brothers I know. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think the trust and loyalty is going to be there big time.
Yeah, Dave Lapham is with us here on ESPN 1530. I think it's interesting for a variety of reasons. There's multiple layers to this. I think naturally we're going to go, and fans are going to go to a couple of years ago when there was that reported and confirmed succession plan that was at least proposed to Hugh Jackson. And now I think if there was ever an owner that would look at Hugh Jackson's record, he was 3-36-1 in Cleveland. He's 11-44-1 as a head coach, would look at that and say, you know what? You didn't get a fair shake in Cleveland. They didn't give you the talent necessary. We think you can be a good head coach. I don't think there's any other owner in the league that would do that besides Mike Brown. And I just wonder if the succession plan, maybe not yet, but that this could lead to that plan being put in place down the line. Marvin Lewis only has a 2-year contract. Do you think there's a possibility that maybe Hugh Jackson could be the coach in waiting, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. You know, there's no question about that. I know Mike Brown holds Hugh Jackson in high regard because his what he did in Cincinnati as an assistant coach and as a coordinator, it was exemplary. I mean, when he coached the receivers, Chad Johnson and T.J. Hushmanzada both had 1,000-yard seasons, got the best production out of that tandem that any coach ever did. When he coached the running backs, he elevated their level of play. When he was an offensive coordinator, it elevated Andy Dalton to MVP level of play. So every position group that he touched played their best football. I mean, he has a hugely successful track record here with the Cincinnati Bengals, and I think Mike Brown just looks at that because, you know, that's what Hugh Jackson was about when he was part of Mike Brown's organization. He doesn't, you know all that goes on up in Cleveland. He probably has an idea, and it's very dysfunctional, obviously. When I was watching Hard Knocks, I think we talked about this before, I'm thinking Hugh's dead man walking.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a couple of Benedict Arnolds as his coordinators that were ready to throw the knife in his back and take his job at the first opportunity. One got fired, the other one got it, and Hugh got fired as well. So, I think that there is one owner that would look at Hugh Jackson through a different set of glasses than others because of having hands-on experience with him multiple times. I mean, he's come and gone here, you know, often, and he's always performed well. So I think, you know, he's going to have a very defined role. I guess the one person that you have to think are going to make sure that he's not looking over his shoulder is Bill Lazor. Mm-hmm. Bill Lazor, you know, has installed his offense. He was very successful here as an offensive coordinator. You don't want Bill Lazor looking over his shoulder saying, you know, what's he going to be about with respect to what I'm trying to get done here? So, you know, I think everything has to be well-defined, and I think all that's going to be observed and watched by Mike Brown and the rest of ownership. I think it's what is the definition of his responsibility and how does he fulfill that definition of responsibility? I think all of that's going to have a hand in whatever happens in the future.
Marvin Lewis yesterday during his press conference kind of said he made the decision, the Terrell Austin decision. Do you think it was his call? Obviously, it felt like he was the reason Terrell Austin was here as defensive coordinator. Do you think he's the one who said, you know, this isn't working? Mike, I get it. We need to win now. We're in win now mode. Let me take over the defense. Do you think Marvin feels any pressure at this point?
Oh yeah, I think he definitely, you know, feels pressure because I think the start that they get off to, you know, he doesn't want it to just melt away into a you know, hugely missed opportunity. And you know, like he said at the press conference yesterday, he feels pressure about his job, you know, every day. And honestly, any successful person is basically their own worst critic. I mean, if you don't self-evaluate, you're not going to rise to a level of achievement like a head coach in the National Football League. I mean, you have to be real with yourself. You have to be honest with yourself. You have to say, am I getting it done or am I not? And then are others that I've hired, are they getting it done or are they not? So, I mean, Coach Austin was handpicked by Marvin Lewis. I mean, that was his scenario. Those guys go all the way back to when Marvin Lewis was an assistant at University of Pittsburgh when he was in the early stages of his coaching career. You know, Coach Austin was a GA, a coaching intern basically, and his mentor is Marvin Lewis. So he's known him for years. I mean, their families are close. It had to be a gut-wrenching decision for Marvin Lewis to pull the trigger, you know, that he had to pull. And it's very, very difficult in this profession for sure to let people like that go. I mean, he certainly didn't expect it to unfold the way it unfolded. I think the most shocked person probably in the entire league and definitely in the entire organization, you know, is Marvin Lewis, that it didn't pan out any better than it did.
Dave Lapham is with us. And Terrell Austin, obviously they move on from him. Can Marvin Lewis, and people look back, and obviously Marvin Lewis was the defensive coordinator for the 2000 Ravens. That was 18 years ago. Can he dial it up again and be that guy? Is it fixable given the roster flaws and injuries that this defense has had?
Well, that's the thing. In that 2000 season, when they still hold the record for fewest points allowed in a 16-game season, he had a bunch of Pro Bowlers and future Hall of Famers. I mean, he had unbelievable talent. And great talent always makes you a brilliant coach. There's no question about it. And I did a game or two when he was defensive. I remember doing the Baltimore Ravens New Orleans Saints game when Marvin was defensive coordinator in that stretch with the Baltimore Ravens. And you know, the players that they had did that game on NBC, and the players that they had, and remember interviewing some of those players and Marvin himself, you know, in production meetings and everything. And they had it going. I mean, they had it rolling. And that team was totally, totally confident in their coach. The coach was confident in the players. You know, there was mutual respect there. You know, it was pretty dynamic. So football's different. The game has evolved since then, since the 2000 season. But football's still football. And I think some of the things that Marvin, the crux of the problem in his estimation is there was too much gray area. Guys weren't exactly sure of what they were supposed to do and how they were supposed to do it. And they were playing passively as a result of it. And, you know, if you are unsure of your responsibility, your confidence is nil. And when you don't play confidently, you can't play fast. You know, and the big mantra during the bye week was, let's simplify so we can play fast. The first offense we play is going to be playing at warp speed. We got to play fast. Didn't happen. because there was a lot of confusion when they did their motions and the speed of the motions and everything else. You know, instead of trusting their eyes get crossed. They were cross-eyed. So, you know, you can't play that way. You can't play if you don't know exactly and 100% in your mind, I got to get there and I got to get there now, instead of like, ooh, should I go there or should I go there? You can't have that. And I think that's what the biggest thing with him is, he's going to make sure everybody knows exactly. He's going to drill it into their heads exactly what you're supposed to do, where you're supposed to be, how you're supposed to get there, when you're supposed to get there, why you're supposed to get there. There's not going to be any questions. And if you have a question, don't be afraid to ask. Don't go out there with uncertainty in your mind and then make mistakes. Ask before, not after the fact. Be proactive, not reactive. I think all those things are going to be, you know, hammered. Detail after detail is going to be hammered. The preparation is going to be different. Like you said in the press conference, you know, they better watch out what they ask for, what they wish for. And the players that I talked to said, yeah, he put his foot down in that meeting, and they're going to go to work. And he's going to grind them. He's going to grind them pretty good.
Are you surprised they made this move now and not during the bye week?
I asked Marvin that, you know, at the press conference. And, you know, I think he probably, in his mind, wanted to see, okay, during the bye, can Coach Austin, you know, make it? Can he make some adjustments? Can he make it work? Can he make it happen? Because honestly, when I saw them at training camp and saw them running around after every incompletion, picking it up like it was a fumble, you know, and, mm-hmm. and running to the football and doing all those things, I thought, man, they're playing fast. These guys are into it. They're buying what he's selling. Watching what they were doing in the preseason or training camp and in the preseason, and then watching them over the last month, it was stunning. Stunning the free fall that took place there. I've never seen anything like it. And at that point, I think Marvin, when he saw the players on the sideline and when he heard things that he heard, like after the Pittsburgh game, Vontaze Burfict in the tunnel, you know, on camera, knowing it was on camera, saying, why did we run cover zero? Why did we have nobody back there in the middle of the football field? We never practiced that in a situation like this. So he threw his coordinator under the bus. Mm-hmm. Carlos Dunlap saying, you know, this is the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Basically throwing the coordinator under the bus. I mean, that, at that point, they did not have confidence in the guy making the calls. And, you know, as a head coach and a former coordinator himself, he knows that you can't have that. You just can't have it. You don't have to like your coach, but you have to respect him, and you have to trust the fact that he's going to put you in good spots to win. You know, win snap after snap. You know, having a beer with the coach is one thing, but you don't want to have a beer with the coach because you like him, and then you can't trust what he's going to call. I'd rather have a coach that I, you know, don't want to be around, but, man, I know when I'm out on the field, he's going to make a great call and put me in a spot to win that snap, and that wasn't taking place.
Dave Lapham is with us here on ESPN 1530. I'm James Rapine. Hugh Jackson, a lot is made, and obviously he returns to the Bengals today, according to reports. A lot's been made of, oh, well, Hugh Jackson can help with game plans against the Cleveland Browns. He can help against the Ravens, and obviously you have the Steelers on the schedule. And I look at this Bengals schedule, they have winnable games. This Sunday at Baltimore, winnable game, two games against Cleveland. You still have Denver and Oakland at home. As bad as it feels right now at 5-4, they're still very much in it, especially if they can get a win on Sunday. But let's focus on Cleveland. They play the Browns twice. How much can Hugh Jackson, having him on staff, how much can that help in those matchups?
Well, like you said, first of all, of the seven remaining games, four division games, two against Cleveland, they have Baltimore this week, and they finished the season at Cleveland, at Pittsburgh. Brutal finish to the season. Two division games on the road. Can't be any more difficult. So you've got a guy that has beaten the Baltimore Ravens and has tied the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, you know, he's got intel into what Cleveland did in preparation, what Cleveland diagnosed as weaknesses and holes in their respective defenses. So not just and honestly, Hugh Jackson has coached in every franchise except Cleveland. He's coached with the Baltimore Ravens, the Cleveland Browns, the Cincinnati Bengals multiple times. He knows the division as well as anybody. He's got firsthand knowledge, having been on the coaching staff, coaching some of the players on those respective teams. So I think it's overrated that you can get a lot of stuff off tape. You know, here's what they're doing. Here's how they're attacking. Here's the formations. Here's, you know, what they're trying to do to break you down. But what he can give you is he knows Baker Mayfield intimately. He knows Greg Williams intimately. He was in meetings with these guys. He knows what makes them tick. He knows what their strengths are and their weaknesses are in terms of, you know, overall mindset or what, any little thing like that can be helpful. What the tendency is, if you do this, he's going to have an issue with it because he likes to do this. And that does not necessarily show up on watching game tape. It doesn't show up on game tape what Greg Williams might be thinking in a certain situation in a football game that he's been on the sideline with, and he knows exactly what he's thinking. So those are the kind of things that can be helpful. He was on the staff with John Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. Jackson coached. He coached Joe Flacco. He was the quarterback coach. He coached Joe Flacco. He knows Joe Flacco inside out. I mean, those are the kind of things I think that give you value in four-year matchups in the last seven games. He knows things about the players that you just can't garner. You just can't get watching tape of formations, plays, that kind of stuff.
Can all of these moving parts, obviously you have a new coordinator, you have Hugh Jackson in the building now, can that, it obviously will get the players' attention, but can it be a distraction with such a big game coming up at Baltimore this Sunday?
I don't know if, I mean, obviously, whenever you make a coaching change, like, you know, a head coaching change, there's always an initial a buzz, a positive reaction to it. You know, the Browns played well last week with Greg Williams, you know, in his early stages as a head coach with the Cleveland Browns. I think that the defensive players, like Marvin said, they were looking for hope. They were looking for help. That's what he said when I saw them coming to the sideline. And he said to me, he said, look, you played. You know what I'm talking about. They were looking at me for help. And I know exactly what he's talking about. So I think the defensive player is going to respond. I really do. You know, no matter what Marvin calls, I think they're going to respond to it because it's different. And it wasn't working what was happening before. So, you know, is there a guarantee that it's going to have, you know, just unbelievable results? No. It may take a while. Maybe a work in progress. May not work at all. May not be any better. But, you know, I thought they hit rock bottom in Kansas City. Well, it wasn't rock bottom. It was close. Rock bottom was coming. And I hope it's rock bottom. I hope nobody hangs 70 on them. But the offenses that are left, they don't attack you like New Orleans, like Kansas City, like Tampa Bay does with their passing attack, you know, like Atlanta does. And I mean, these teams are, it's like track meets. Instead of batons, it's football. And the offenses that are left, with the exception of the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, and the L.A. Chargers with Rivers at quarterback and his weapons, those are the two, you know, that you look at and say, wow, you know, those offenses, they're a snootful. But the others, they don't, it's not warp speed. It's not all this motion and movement with guys that run, you know, sub 4.340. You know, it's a different kind of animal. So I think it's going to look like, you know, being exposed to that warp speed stuff, and then now you change your coordinator and you're doing things differently, and they don't know exactly what Marvin Lewis is going to do. They probably have an idea, but, you know, they have the advantage of, oh, the newness of it. What will he really do? How different will they be? You know, you're saying, who are we going to prepare for, Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson? Well, they're saying with a quarterback with very little experience, okay, Lamar, we're not sure exactly what the Bengals are going to do defensively with Marvin Lewis calling it, but here's what we think. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. But the Bengals are setting themselves up for a situation, too, when you look at the other side of it. They signed Hugh Jackson, mm-hmm. four division games, and if they fall flat on their faces, it's like, that's laughingstock. You know, hey, I mean, they bring all this possibility, all this upside, and they fell flat on their faces collectively. But you know what? Like I said, I agree with you when you started this little interview off. They did something. You know, they weren't content to just, like, sit and look at just, you know, it's not NFL football what was happening. I don't think they had any choice but to do it, but mm-hmm. they did it, and they made a change. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, and last question for you, Lapp, and I appreciate the time as always. I look at this offense, and it's an offensive league, and I know the defense has a ton of issues, and you look at the numbers, and they're about as awful as you could imagine through 9 weeks. It's an offensive league. This team has to score points. They're going to have to score this Sunday in Baltimore. They're going to have to score next week against Cleveland. If they hope to win, they're going to have to put up 20-plus points probably. And I'm not sure how consistent they can do that with A.J. Green. Do you think that obviously it's a huge loss. Do you think Andy and the young wide receivers, and obviously Joe Mixon, Giovanni Bernard, do you think it's possible that they can stay afloat, that they can keep themselves above water over the next few weeks, assuming Green's out for the next 3-4 weeks, which I think is probably the most likely scenario.
Yeah, I think AJ is going to be out, you know, at least three games, counting the bye week, you know, a month with that injured toe. So it's going to be 3 football games. So now he misses these 2 division games. And look what he did against Baltimore in the first game. He scored 3 touchdowns in less than 17 minutes. You know, the football game was early in the second quarter. He had his 3rd touchdown. So, you know, John Harbaugh has been on record saying, are we ever going to cover A.J. Green? A.J. Green has been a thorn in Baltimore's side, in Cincinnati, on the road in Baltimore. That is a huge, huge deal, not having him against a division rival, you know, the next couple of weeks. There's no question about it. You know, and coverages are going to be tilted differently. They already were, you know, with Tyler Boyd. Other guys are going to have to step up. John Ross is going to have to up his game. He can't play inconsistently as he is. And that's the key. The entire offense has to exhibit consistency. On that first drive, they go down the field in 8 plays. They run it 5 times, throw it 3. Andy Dalton, 3 for 3. They score a touchdown. I mean, they don't even get to 3rd down. I mean, it's 1st and 2nd down the entire drive. After that, it's zilcho. I mean, it's nothing. And, you know, 3 and outs. And when your defense is struggling, the worst thing you can do offensively is go 3 and out and take less than a minute off the clock. So if you're having issues on 3rd down, go 0-for-6 on 3rd down, and your defense is dead last in the league, getting off the field on 3rd down, you're going to have a brutal game. I don't care who the opponent is. They're 31st in the NFL. Their time of possession is under 27 minutes a game. I mean, they have to be good on 1st and 2nd down, convert on 3rd down, move the chains. It's all about 1st downs. It's all about, you know, keeping the defense off the football field and then scoring points. When they get in the red zone, they're efficient. They're number 2 in the NFL in touchdown percentage. But they're not getting there often enough. They're not making enough plays between the 20s and not being consistent enough offensively. And that's what they have to do. Everybody has to look themselves in the mirror, just like the defensive players are, and play your tail off every single snap. Don't take any plays off. You just can't afford to do it. You have to do exactly what you're supposed to do from snap to whistle. And you can't half-ass it. You just can't do it.
Lap, I appreciate the time, as always. I know I kept you a while. There's just so much to discuss. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure, James. You're the man.
Great stuff there from Dave Lapham. As always, I love talking to Lap. I mean, it doesn't get any better when it comes to Bengals. Jimmy, we got to get that podcasted. We will get on that now at ESPN1530.com. Up next, Quick Hits, which includes college hoops and the best thing I saw yesterday. You're not going to want to miss this. This is the Skyline Chili Cincy 360 show on ESPN 1530.
Cincy 360 continues on ESPN 1530, Cincinnati's sports station.
This is the Skyline Chili Cincy 360 show. I'm James Erpine. Make sure you head to the closest Skyline to you. Get the James special. Order the James special. It's a 3-way, 2 Cholitos. And every day it should be Skyline time. Maybe a little hot sauce on there. I'm making myself hungry. Every time we mention Skyline, I'm like, man, I could go for some Skyline right now. Mo back at it today, 3:05. He's going to have plenty on Hugh Jackson, the Bengals. I'm sure he'll do a little bit more Bearcats as College Game Day. Going to be covering the Bearcats as they play UCF this Saturday at 8 o'clock. On the Hugh Jackson thing real quick, I don't think it's going to blow up in their faces. You know, what's the worst case scenario? Because right now it seems like the ship is sinking, right? 5-4. Marvin Lewis takes over the defense and he's going to have more responsibility and he brings someone in that he trusts, that the organization trusts to help him with, I assume, head coaching duties. I assume some of that stress that comes with being a head coach, Hugh Jackson can come and help alleviate at least a piece of that while Marvin Lewis is helping and hopefully figuring out how to get the defense back to where it needs to be. To me, that makes a lot of sense. Now, will it fix it? I have no idea. It's a little bit of a desperate move, But sometimes desperate times call for desperate measures. How about that? A wise man once said that. I'm going to use that here. Desperate times sometimes call for desperate measures. Hugh Jackson is a desperate measure, but I get it.
It's time for Cincy 360 Quick Hits on ESPN 1530.
Quick Hits is a service of Rumkey Restoration. If you have water damage or need your carpets cleaned, maybe a flooded basement has left a mess, go to RumkeyRestores.com. College basketball action tonight in the tri-state. North Carolina Central. It's going to be at Fifth Third Arena, newly renovated, to take on UC. That starts at 7 o'clock. Pregame coverage at 6:30 on 700 WLW. Xavier hosts Wisconsin tonight at 6:30 on 55 KRC. This is a big matchup for the Musketeers, an early season test, that one at the Cintas Center. FC Cincinnati revealed its new crest yesterday. See, I think this is cool, and Mo says logo, I say crest, whatever, whatever you want to call it. I thought it was fine. I think people overreact. I think it's fine. I don't love it. I'm not in love with it. But odds are, regardless of what the logo or crest was, I wouldn't be in love with it. It looks fine. It looks fine. And you certainly hope that that logo is good enough to get really good players to help them win an MLS. The best thing I saw yesterday was Odell Beckham Jr. and Marquise Goodwin dancing with a fan before the Giants went over the 49ers. Odell Beckham gets destroyed. But he should have had about four touchdowns on the field yesterday. And he seems like a pretty good dude off the field. And I know cameras were there, and obviously it went viral. And it's real easy if you type in Odell Beckham. That's probably one of the first things that's going to come up. But to me, that's awesome. It was awesome to see. And, yeah, it was the best thing I saw yesterday. The worst thing I saw was Stanley. Stanley passed away at the age of 95. And you just think about everything he did for people's imaginations, right? He's such an innovator, such a creator, someone, you know, all the Marvel and all the superhero stuff he did. It is, when you have someone like that, it's more than just, oh, I'm going to make movies or write comic books or I'm going to be an entertainer. It impacts people's lives. And I know a lot of people mourning the passing of Stan Lee, who was 95 years old. I'm James Rapine. That's going to do it for me. Mo back at it today at 3:05. The Stephen A. Smith Show is next. Plenty of Bengals coverage, by the way, at ESPN1530.com/James, including my interview with Dave Lapham. That'll be podcasted there as well on the podcast page at ESPN1530.com and the iHeartRadio app. I'll be back at it on Thursday. Mo has this show tomorrow. Until then, thank you so much for listening today on ESPN 1530.